Well, hello, Saints. Continuing on with our studies in the life of David, today we're going to look at David's great fall. Last time we looked at the goodness of the grace of God with David and Mephibosheth. So David had gone to a great height there to show the heart of God and what grace is really about. But then the next major event in the life of David is his great fall or his great sin with Bathsheba. And this passage I'm probably going to do in a few parts because it's too big to do all in one. So we'll look at 2 Samuel chapter 11 and we'll look at what events led really to David's fall. Just it didn't happen overnight, and how he found himself really in that position. The thing I love about the Bible is that it doesn't gloss over the sins of mankind, and it doesn't even gloss over the greatest saints in the Bible. David was a man after God's own heart, yet it is recorded of him, of this dark period of his life and the sins that he actually engaged in. God had said earlier that he was going to put a man on the throne who was a man after God's own heart. And God put his reputation on the line there when he spoke these things about David. So if David can fall, we need to take heed, because we're all made of the same stuff. He was a man after God's own heart. And if it's capable for him, it's capable for you and for me. Before we go to 2 Samuel 11, I just want to read 1 Corinthians chapter 10. In verse 11 it says, "Now all these happened to them as examples." What he's doing, he's relaying the stories of the Old Testament to the Corinthian church before this. And he says, "All these things happened to them as examples, and they were written for our admonition, upon whom the end of the ages have come. Therefore, let him who thinks he stands take heed, lest he fall." In other words, all of the Old Testament pictures and stories are given for our instruction, and we are to learn from them. And Paul goes on to say, if you think that you stand, watch yourself, lest you fall. In other words, if things happen to the Old Testament saints, if what's true of them, it's potentially true of you and for me at the same time. Now, you might look at the life of David and you might say to yourself, I could never do that. I could never do what David did here. But this is what Paul is saying. If you think you stand, take heed. Check on yourselves, because the same weaknesses that ran through David is the same weaknesses that run through you and me. Now, you would think, at what age do you think David is here? This is David's great sin with Bathsheba and committing adultery and taking someone else's wife. What age do you think he is? Is he a young man? Is he an old man? He's around 50 years of age. He'd been king for 20 years before these events occur. 50 years of age, that's quite old. Now, you would think at a point in his life like that he would be immune to such things. But it just goes to show you, saints, that the flesh nature, or our Adamic nature, that carnal nature that rises up at times and rules us, doesn't get any better. It doesn't improve. It will always be rotten. It will always be like a pig nature. It doesn't get better. It doesn't improve. It doesn't matter what age you are, that nature will remain the same until we are fully redeemed by the Lord. He's 50 when these events take place, which I was quite shocked at and surprised. 50 years of age, and these events take place. So we'll start in 2 Samuel chapter 11, verse 1. "It happened in the spring of the year, at the time when the kings go out to battle, that David sent Joab and his servants with him, and all Israel, and they destroyed the people of Ammon and besieged Rabbah. But David remained at Jerusalem." The first indication that you've got something wrong is right in the very first verse of chapter 11. It happened. So it's telling you about something great that happened in the life of David. And in the very last part of that says, but David remained at Jerusalem. The first indication that something is seriously wrong. All the kings, at the time when it was time to go out to war, they all went out to war with their people, but not David. The king should have been with his army. He should have been with the people. But he wasn't. He remained at Jerusalem. So right from the very first verse here, you get an indication that the Spirit of God is telling you something is wrong in the life of David. He shouldn't have been staying at Jerusalem when all his men were out fighting. So why was he at Jerusalem? Remember, he'd been king for 20 years. Maybe he thought that he didn't need to be with his army. Maybe he thought that his days of fighting were over. Maybe there had crept into his life this viewpoint that sometimes we can actually get, that we just need to relax a little bit. We've done our part. Put your feet up. Enjoy yourself a little bit. You've been king. Enjoy the pleasures of your kingdom. You don't need to be out with the army. You've got other people to do that work. All of these things talk about that David should never have been at Jerusalem in the first place. He was in the wrong place at the wrong time when these events happen. When all the kings go out to battle, David, he remained at Jerusalem. His men went out, but he didn't. In Ezekiel chapter 16, verse 49, it talks about the sin of Sodom. You know, Sodom and Gomorrah, who had become increasingly wicked, and God had to judge. And we quite often think about that, what Sodom was like, that they had become so wicked that God had to judge them. And in that passage in Ezekiel 16, it says that the sin of Sodom was this, that they had pride, that they had fullness of food, and they had an abundance of idleness. Now, all of these things led to the wickedness of that place. And you could sometimes, like David's perception here, he doesn't need to be with his army. He can just remain at Jerusalem. He can put his feet up. He can relax a little bit. He can enjoy himself with whatever is abundant in his house. And all of these speak of pride. All of these speak of that he's got a fullness of what he needs. But an abundance of idleness is what struck me in that Ezekiel passage. They had too much time twiddling their fingers. They had too much time lounging around doing nothing. And that led to a destructive lifestyle, an abundance of idleness. It's not good that we have too much idle time. The traps of leisure hours. If you've got too much idle time, sometimes it can open the door to things that we don't like or will cause us harm. And for us in the West, it can be a lot like that. Our lives can be made up of planning holidays or the pleasures being the goal of life. We need to be aware, and we need to be watching for this abundance of idleness, because it can open the door to things that we don't want. So in verse 2, it says, then it happened one evening that David arose from his bed, and he walked on the roof of the king's house. And from the roof he saw a woman bathing, and the woman was very beautiful to behold. So one evening he arises from his bed. Again, you've got these indications that he was up at night. He should have been sleeping at night. He's probably lounging around in the daytime, having the odd snooze, having a little bit of a lie down. And when it comes to what he should be doing at night is sleeping, he can't sleep. He's got an abundance of idleness in his life. He's up at night. Now, I don't know about you, but what's the old saying that if you're up at night, you haven't done enough in the day? When it comes to me, by the time it's bedtime, I think I'm asleep, heading down toward my pillow, snoring once my head hits the pillow. My wife always says that she can't wake me. I hardly ever get up at night because I'm normally too busy in the day. But David we've got here, he's up at night. He can't sleep. Doesn't know what to do with his time. Here he is in a position, and obviously the king's house is above the other households that are out there. So over the wall he looks, and he sees a woman. And the woman was very beautiful to behold. So straight away, you've got the temptation for David is coming in through the eye gate. We need to be very careful with the eye gate. A lot of temptation comes in through what we see. And you're always going to see a beautiful woman. It's not the first look that counts. It's the second look, or the third look, or the fourth look. And it's the eye. Once it's in the eye gate, it's tricky and it's difficult to actually deal with. When you think about Eve, when she was tempted in the garden, Satan subtly proposed things about God to her and about the fruit that she should take. But it says when she saw it, she saw that it was desirable. She saw that it was good for making one wise. It came in through the eye gate, and instantly it took hold of her will. So we need to be really careful about what we see and what we watch. So verse 3, so David sent and inquired about the woman, and someone said, is this not Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam, the wife of Uriah the Hittite? Now, neglect had actually crept into David's life. These events just don't happen overnight. I believe that David actually had a weakness for women. There was rules for the kings. In Deuteronomy 17, verse 14 to 20, God put out laws for the kings. And one of the laws that they would not to acquire many wives, lest their heart already turn away. Now, up to this point, do you know how many wives David had? He had seven. He already had seven wives. But obviously, this is not enough. So neglect had actually crept in. This reminds me of James chapter 1. He says in James 1, but each one is tempted, in verse 14, when he is drawn away by his own desires and enticed. Actually, I'll read from verse 13. Let no one say when he is tempted, I am tempted by God. For God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he himself tempt anyone. So straight away, temptation does not come from God. It is always from the enemy. But each one is tempted when he is drawn away by his own desires and enticed. Then when desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin. And sin, when it is full grown, brings forth death. Do not be deceived, my beloved brethren. James puts the problem squarely upon us. The problem lies with us, and it's our desires. And he says here that each one is tempted when he is drawn away by his own desires and enticed. The problem lies with us. It's our carnal desires. It's our fallen desires that get tempted. And the word here is enticed, and it's used from a fishing term, means to draw away. In other words, I love my fishing, and the whole purpose of it is that you put on a piece of bait, and you put that piece of bait so it looks like it's going to be as natural as it can be, so that when it's in the water, it's drifting and floating naturally around, and that it causes the fish to be drawn from what it's doing and enticed into taking the piece of bait and being ensnared. So this is the term that James is talking about, that each one is tempted when he is drawn away by his own desires and enticed. So when David saw this woman, the desire of that woman acted upon his lust for woman, and he was enticed. He was drawn away by that very thing. The problem always lies with us. It's like the little boy who the mother called to him from the kitchen. He was in the pantry with his hand in the cookie jar, and she said, "What are you doing in the pantry?" And he said, "I'm fighting temptation." Well, that's not the place to fight temptation with your hand in the cookie jar. But do you know that there's many people today that are in exactly the same position? Many people with addictions to drinking. You don't go and hang out in a bar. You don't be around alcohol or those places where you can be enticed and drawn away. Many people that have issues with pornography or the sexual sins. It's the eye gate that actually ensnares them. You don't go there. You don't watch movies that encourage that type of thing. Once it's in the eye gate, it's really difficult to actually deal with, because it remains in your memory, and it creates lust with our own desires within us. So if you've got issues with pornography, you've got to put up so many barriers to actually not go into those areas. But many people today, they allow themselves to be put in positions where they can be enticed, they can be tempted. And David here, I believe David's got an issue in this area, an issue of lust and an issue with women. He was not to produce or get many wives, but he should never have been here in the first place. He should have been with his men in the field, taking care of the battles that needed to be done, but he isn't. He's lounging around, and when he's lounging around, the enemy sees an opportunity, and he just happens to see this woman. And this woman that he sees is very beautiful to behold, and he doesn't just take one look, he takes another look and another look. And from there, he's enticed. So David acts upon that lust, and he actually inquires after her. In verse 3, we said, so David sent and inquired about this woman, and someone said, "Is this not Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam, the wife of Uriah the Hittite?" He inquired after her. So his will is acting upon this lust. He's already making active steps into, who is this girl? Now, there's some major roadblocks here, even in him asking his man to find out who she is. Because he responds to him, well, look, she's the daughter of someone, and she's the wife of someone. These should have been major roadblocks to David. She's someone's daughter. She's someone's wife. Those should have been the very stop signs that held David back. But because his will is involved in acting upon lust, he's on this momentum train, and it's really hard to stop. It's someone's daughter. How would David have liked it if someone had acted this way toward his daughter? It's actually someone's wife. How would David have acted and responded if someone had done this, what he's about to do, to one of his wives? But you see, his will is involved, and he's on this train, and it's really hard to get off. Adultery is huge in our society. Interestingly, when I've been looking at this week, I was listening to the radio, and the radio host, it was a non-Christian station, and the radio host had a whole section, 2 hours, 2 to 3 hours, on cheating or adultery. And I was astounded how widespread it is in society. And there was people that were ringing up who had cheated on their partners, and there were, and marriages and just partners, and there was people ringing up that had been cheated on, and it was just a train wreck. It was an absolute wreck. But the one consistent thing that came through that I heard, 99% of the people who had done the cheating, they all regretted it. They all regretted that they had fallen into this act, and the wreckage that had brought upon their marriages, the wreckage that it had brought upon their relationships, the damage that it had done to their children. They all regretted the fact that they had fallen in this area. And I just couldn't believe how big it was in society. There was just call after call after call and wreckage everywhere. There was, I think, only one or two calls where the marriages had worked through it and had come out the other side, which is great. But for the majority, there was just destruction everywhere. But do you know that this event is big also in the church? It shouldn't be, but it's also evident around God's people. How many pastors do you know that have fallen in this area that David has fallen or was about to fall into? I know quite a few. They've fallen in this area. And pastors need to be really careful because they're around a lot of women, and a lot of their staff are women. So this is an area that they need to be incredibly careful of, that they don't put themselves in positions that this can happen, because it just wrecks marriages. It splits churches, it wrecks churches, it wrecks the person's ministry. It brings God a bad witness, and all of it is just destructive. But it happens. It happens in Christian circles. And it happens because of, just like with David, there's a neglect in some area of the saint's life. There's neglect. And sometimes you can be having trouble in your marriage, and you can receive attention from someone. And you can enjoy that intention. And before you know it, you're starting down this track that David did. You're taking the second look, the third look. You're enjoying the attention that someone is giving. But all of these, like James said, that sin is active and it always produces something. Always produces something. We're all capable of gross sin, and sin is not barren. It always produces something. It produces death in the end. So we need to be careful that we don't fall in the same way that David is falling. James says that when desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin, and when sin is full grown, it brings forth death. Sin is never barren. It's never barren. It always produces something. The wages of sin is death. It always pays. And Satan is the great paymaster, and he'll see that we get paid. Sin is not barren. It always produces. And David is going down this track that he's seen this woman. It's acted. His will has acted upon his desires to lust after this woman. And now he pursues who she is, and that should have been roadblocks to him, but he's going to take it another step further. So in verse 4, then David sent messengers, and he took her, and she came to him, and he lay with her, for she was cleansed from her impurity, and she returned to her house. And the woman conceived, so she sent and told David, and said, I am with child. So all of those roadblocks, that she was someone's daughter, that she was someone's wife, that didn't stop David. His will is acting upon his lust, and he has to have her. She's the wife of someone, but that's not enough to stop him. So she conceives, and she sends a message to David that she was pregnant. So what is David going to do from this point? Probably going to cover Uriah and what comes after this in another message. But David now has to cover his tracks. He is guilty of adultery, and under Jewish law, that is death. The laws were given by God that even though you were king, if you were guilty of adultery, the punishment was death. So David has to actually cover his sin. And it's horrific what he does. He actually has to cover his sin, and he actually murders Bathsheba's husband. Not by his own hand. He allows someone else to do it, but he orchestrates it. So sin always produces something. It's never barren. He does one act, and then he's got to cover the next. But we'll look at that a little later. So what are the things that we need to watch? Because we can all fall into the same error. I'll read out a few scriptures, because we are in a battle continually in our walk upon this earth. Now, 1 Peter 5, 8 and 9 says this: be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, walks about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. Resist him, steadfast in the faith, knowing that the same sufferings are experienced by your brotherhood in the word, in the world. So he starts off here by saying, you need to be sober, you need to be of a right mind, and you need to be vigilant. Another word for vigilant is we need to be watchful. We need to be incredibly watchful over the areas of our lives. This event didn't happen to David overnight. It happened because of a whole, he had allowed neglect to actually, of certain areas to creep into his life. He wasn't watchful over his life. But we need to be watchful, because the devil walks about as a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. We are the hatred. He hates us. He hates God first, and then he hates us because we're created in his image and born again after his likeness. He has a hatred for us, and he will do anything he can to actually hinder your growth in God and my growth in God. We need to be vigilant. We need to be watchful. Proverbs 4:23 says, keep thy heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. And Jesus said the same thing about the heart in Matthew 15. He said, for out of the heart proceeds murder, adulteries, fornication, theft, and evil thoughts. So it's the heart of man that we need to guard about. We need to be watchful over the heart. Psalm 119 says, thy word I have hid in my heart, that I might not sin against you. If David had hid God's word in his heart at that point, he wouldn't have sinned. He would have known that his actions were actually going to cause harm to himself, to others, and to the reputation of God. He wasn't resting upon the word. He would have known that adultery is a sin before God. But he's actively involved here in pursuing his lust for this woman. Ephesians 6:10. I'll just find it. Talks about, finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. Put on the whole armor of God, that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this age, and against spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places. Therefore, take up the whole armor of God, that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand. Stand therefore, having girded your waist with truth, having put on the breastplate of righteousness, having shod your feet with the preparation of the gospel of peace, and above all, taking the shield of faith, with which you will be able to quench all the fiery darts of the wicked one. Take the helmet of salvation and the sword of the Spirit, which is the word of God. And pray, and continue to pray, he goes on in verse 18. We are in a battle. We are in a battle against the wiles of the devil. And he is incredibly tricky and incredibly deceptive. Think about when Joshua came into the land. Was it easy for him? No, he had battles to fight. First of all, he had places to conquer and places to inhabit, and he had to take up the sword and actually fight those battles. But Satan didn't leave it just there. Straight after they had victories and battles, they had defeats. They had the town of Ai. And do you remember Achan's great sin? Satan attempted to corrupt the nation by allowing Ai to lust after a Babylonian garment and the treasures that he saw in Jericho. And he took them. Lust had infiltrated into his heart, and he took them because he saw them, that they were beautiful and expensive and costly, and he hid them. But God judged the whole nation because of the sin of that man, and they were defeated at Ai until they had judged the sin. So you see Satan's attempt to corrupt right there. The next passage that happens to Joshua, when Satan comes in on one angle, he turns around and he comes around on another. And they were tricked into making an alliance with the Gibeonites. Remember, who changed their clothing and made them look like they were old travelers who were weary and worn down and needed help. Satan came in and allowed the world to be infiltrated into the people of God, and they made a treaty with them. They were deceived. When he doesn't come one way, he'll come another. If he's not persecuting the church, he's coming as an angel of light to deceive. The wiles of the devil. We need to be fully aware that we have an enemy that is always on the lookout, and there'll be things that present themselves to you and to me, and we need to see them for what they are. I remember when I was a young believer, just in line with this adultery, I was a young believer and I'd just come in from a surf, and I was sitting on the grass on the bank watching the waves, and I'd probably been 2 years in the Lord, I think, 2-3 years in the Lord, and this girl walks up to me and she said to me, "I've been watching you. Would you like to come into the back of the van and have a look at the back of my van with me?" That's straight from the pit. These things happen, you know. She was wanting me to go into the back of the van with her. And we need to be like Joseph, that when these things happen, you leave your stuff there and you run the other way. You don't run toward it. But there will always be opportunities. There will always be someone that gives you a little bit of attention when you're down, or when you're being a little neglected, or when your marriage is actually suffering a little bit and things aren't so easy. In from the side will come a little bit of attention from someone else, and you need to deal with it, and we need to judge it for what it is right there and then, and don't entertain it. Because we do have an enemy that is seeking to actually halt our progress with God. So if you're one of these people that is actually playing around a little bit, that likes the attention from another woman, you need to stop it, or another man. Adultery is not just one way. It is both sexes. And both men and women are all in this together. We can both be deceived, and we can both act upon our natural desires for another. But if we're one of those that are enjoying a little bit of attention from someone, we've got a wife at home or a husband at home, but we enjoy the attention, we need to stop it. You need to run from it. You need to flee from it, from the destruction that will actually bring if you actually act upon it. And there's also those that have actually fallen, that love the Lord Jesus Christ, but they've fallen in this area. And it happens. It shouldn't happen, but it happens. But God can actually forgive. So as we'll go on and look at David, I'm not sure how you could get up after committing adultery and murder. How would you get up as a Christian and carry on? But David actually does. And God actually forgives him of his sins. He has to suffer the consequences of his sins, but God does forgive him and cleanse him, and he continues on. So if you're one of these that have fallen, there is always repentance and there is always cleansing. You will have to suffer the consequences of that action, but you can continue in God, and he can cleanse you and stand you back up on your feet, that you may follow him being bitten and hopefully being bitten only once and never again. We all need to be like Joseph, who ran away and not toward the sin. So because we're going to do this in a few parts, I'll leave it there and we'll look at what David does trying to cover his sin with poor old Uriah, sending him to his death. And David writes a few psalms about this area of his life, so we will look at that also, and the effect that sin actually had upon David before he was cleansed and made righteous once again. So I pray that you would see something in these passages, and we always need to remember, if you think you're strong and you think that you stand, take heed, as Paul said in 1 Corinthians, because we're all made of the same stuff and we're all susceptible to temptation. We need to be careful that we don't fall. So God bless, and may the Lord be with us all. Amen.